if you are a parent, or I mean, even if you just manage people, you know the frustration cycle.
Oh, yeah.
You spend all your time and energy dealing with the, well, the outburst, the missed deadline, the messy space.
Your surface stuff.
Right. But a week later, the exact same negative pattern is back. You're just constantly in reaction mode, putting out these small fires, and you never seem to solve the core problem.
Well, it's exhausting, isn't it? Because focusing only on the outward behavior, it means you're trying to change the surface without ever addressing the internal mechanism.
Yeah, that's the difference.
It's the crucial difference between simple behavior modification and, you know, achieving genuine, lasting character growth.
Okay, so let's unpack this. This is a huge challenge. Yeah. Our mission today is a deep dive into what the source materials are calling the heart-based approach to parenting.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking specifically at strategies from Dr. Scott Taransky and Joanne Miller in their Thrive program, which is all about moving past just like immediate compliance to fostering real-life skills and emotional maturity.
And the core idea here, the whole thesis, is that the most effective, lasting change starts with the heart. It's about shifting our focus from the visible to the invisible.
I like that.
It makes you think of that powerful message in the sources. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Our job as guides is to help our children learn how to look at their own hearts, too.
When you lay it out like that, it sounds so strategic. But for most of us, especially when we're tired, we just default to the opposite.
We do. We default to what's called reactive parenting. Reactive parenting is essentially living life as a series of crisis responses.
Right. Firefighting.
You react to the latest negative behavior. Maybe you dole out a consequence and you just hope that eventually the behavior will, you know, extinguish itself. It's tiring because you're playing defense all day.
And it often fails because the root cause is still there.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that if you just stop one negative habit, sometimes a different, equally negative one just crops up in its place.
Precisely. A heart-based approach recognizes that persistent bad attitudes, or say, habitual failure to clean up, or chronic impatience, these are almost always indications of deeper issues. Deeper desires located within the heart.
The operating system.
Exactly. If you address that operating system strategically, you start seeing enduring positive change in every area.
The sources spend a lot of time on emotions, and that's where things get really tricky, especially for kids. It's so easy to feel like your anger or frustration is completely controlled by what's happening outside of you.
Of course. If only my coworker would finish their part, I wouldn't be stressed.
If only my sister wouldn't take my toy, I wouldn't be so angry.
It's a very natural assumption to place the blame externally, but the source material really emphasizes that while those external factors play a role, we have far more control over our emotional reactions than we think.
Hmm.
Our emotions are ultimately triggered by the deeper values, expectations, and beliefs that we hold strongly in our hearts.
So taking responsibility for your own emotional state, that's kind of the litmus test for maturity.
Absolutely. And that's what makes the ice cream mystery balls analogy so relatable.
I love this one.
So imagine you have a scoop of ice cream, the surface, the flavor, the color, that's the behavior or the emotion we all see, but you bite into it, and inside are these unexpected hard fillings. Maybe raisins, maybe chocolate chips.
Just raisins.
Right. So the surface is the anger, but the core, that mystery filling, contains the real drivers, the entrenched beliefs, the unstated expectations, or the selfish desires that are truly driving that emotional reaction.
So instead of yelling about the melted ice cream, which is the behavior, we need to find out why they expected only chocolate chips in the first place.
That's the heart belief.
It sounds like detective work, but it also gives us a clear path forward. If the heart is the operating system, we need to know what kind of output we're programming it for.
Which leads perfectly to the crucial step of establishing vision. Visioning, what they call lesson 3A, it shifts the entire mindset. It moves us from just stopping a bad thing now to actively.
So we're giving the child a picture of their future self, helping them understand why character qualities are important for the rest of their lives.
For the rest of their lives, not just for next week.
Right, for their life in 10 or 20 years. As like an organized person, a responsible parent, a patient friend.
And that's where point B mapping becomes so essential. We identify point B, which is the desired outcome, right? The specific character quality we're aiming for, say, initiative or perseverance.
Okay.
Then we view the common daily problems. the morning rush, that annoying homework assignment, the sibling squabble, not as interruptions to our day, but as calculated opportunities to practice developing that specific point B quality.
That makes the day-to-day grind feel so purposeful.
Yeah.
The argument over taking the trash out isn't just about garbage anymore.
No, it's about developing reliability.
As a practice session.
Exactly. The source materials are so clear on this. The seemingly tiny act of being reliable in a chore or being patient with an annoying person is about developing patterns of thinking that lead to life skills you need into adulthood, and those patterns start now.
And this ties directly back to maturity in how we view our life goals, the difference between pleasure and joy.
This is a profound distinction, and it's often missed. Maturity means realizing life isn't just about chasing immediate pleasure or fun or being constantly entertained.
Which is what our culture pushes so hard.
It does, and when we prioritize that instant pleasure, it often leads directly to the avoidance of responsibility.
You see that everywhere, right? Why clean my room when playing video games gives me an immediate dopamine hit.
Why do the boring work when I can seek out stimulation? The source material suggests that true maturity is about finding your mission, a higher purpose to be responsible and contributing.
To the family and then to the world.
Right. And when you work toward that mission, when you complete that difficult, responsible task, that produces joy, which is described as something greater than pleasure. Joy comes from contributing and creating, not merely consuming.
That deep satisfaction.
The satisfaction of knowing you met a standard of excellence even when it was difficult.
That is such a powerful internal motivator. Okay, so once we have that vision and mission established, we need the tools to actually build the character. And this is where the approach moves sharply away from just, you know, relying on punishment.
We have to distinguish between correction and training. Correction addresses the mistake, and it may motivate a behavior change, but training is the much stronger, more proactive tool for lasting change.
It's the practice.
It's repeated practice. Practicing kindness, practicing cooperation, practicing self-control. This positive repetition builds internal strength and competence.
Now, in the heat of the moment, when we're correcting someone, it is so easy to confuse firmness with harshness.
So easy.
It's hard to draw that line when you are tired, frustrated, and running late.
That's where the internal check is vital. Harshness involves emotional intensity. It often involves a rising voice, sarcasm, or expressing frustration that really damages the relationship.
And the sources say that harshness actually works against positive heart change.
It does. As the proverb says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger.
So firmness has to be unemotional. It's just drawing a boundary. This is the rule. And we are going to fix this now.
Precisely. Firmness simply draws a line and maintains the expectation. It is gentle, but it's unwavering. And this perspective also requires changing how we view correction itself. We should view it as a gift.
A gift. That helps you improve your internal design. That sounds incredibly humbling for the child and the parent.
It is. Think of the penny boat analogy. Integrity is the ability to withstand pressure in life, kind of like a boat designed to hold heavy pennies without sinking. When correction happens, the boat failed. The realization that there are things we don't know that we don't know fosters the humility you need to learn from that failure. You get a second chance to improve your boat's design.
So the best response to correction is to first examine your own heart.
Always. See where you can grow, even if you feel misunderstood. It shifts the focus from being defensive to internal improvement.
So how do we implement this training? The sources detail a practical exercise called the instruction routine for developing cooperation.
This is a mandatory repeated drill. It's designed to develop responsiveness to authority. The goal is competence, not just compliance.
And you use really simple tasks, right?
Super simple, non-critical tasks, like walking into the room and asking the child to straighten a pillow or to walk and get you a glass of water, and you should practice this 20 times a day.
20 times a day? That sounds intense. Why so often?
Because it forces the child to interrupt their own agenda for someone else, quickly and with a good attitude. That ability interrupting my agenda for others is the absolute foundation of cooperation and respect for authority.
I see.
If a child can respond quickly and cheerfully to a simple, non-consequential request, they build the pattern to respond well when the stakes are higher.
And for teens, the sources suggest interrupting their activity before you give the instruction, especially if they're glued to electronics.
Yes. That interruption forces them to exercise their heart in giving up their agenda quickly, which is, let's be honest, often the hardest part for an adolescent.
This brings us to a huge pain point for parents. The question of how. Most parents are great at stating the what,
Clean your room.
Be kind to your sister. But we often fail to teach the plan the how.
And if you focus on the how, you get practical. You start building the underlying heart qualities like thoroughness, organization, and thoughtfulness. The first step is creating a working definition with the child to make those abstract qualities tangible.
Can you give me an example of what a working definition looks like?
Sure. Kindness isn't just a warm, fuzzy feeling. A working definition might be. Kindness means listening to my brother's ideas without interrupting.
Okay, very specific.
And saying two nice things to him today. Patience might be defined as waiting for my turn without complaining and keeping a happy look on my face. It defines specific, practical actions the child can actually do.
Once we have that practical definition, we can transfer responsibility for self-management, which is where the T-chart tool comes in.
The T-chart is indispensable for teaching children how to manage their own issues. You create a chart with the child for a specific challenge. Let's say, managing my anger when I lose a game.
Okay.
On one side, they list the specific things they will do physically, maybe walk away or take 3 deep breaths. On the other side, they list the specific things they will say to themselves internally to manage the situation.
Like a mantra.
Exactly. Maybe it's just a game or I can try again next time.
That is brilliant because it moves the self-management burden from the parent, the constant prompter, the nagger, to the child. They own the plan.
They own it. And true maturity requires managing oneself, that internal motivation, and achieving interdependence, which means managing yourself while still cooperating with others.
That's a great distinction.
That reliance on parents to prompt daily tasks, like always reminding them to take out the recycling, it dramatically increases family tension and it just delays maturity.
And that leads perfectly into the internal mechanisms we need to build that initiative. Let's talk about the 3 levels of thinking, which guide growth from self-centeredness to responsibility.
We're guiding children through a natural progression. Level 1 thinking is focused entirely on self. What I want, what I'm doing, and how this affects me.
Which is where most young children naturally start.
Yes. Level 2 thinking involves asking different outward-focused questions that show responsibility. Instead of, is this fun? They start asking, what is the responsible thing to do here? Or how does my action affect others?
That's that vital stepping stone of duty and obligation.
It is. And then the ultimate goal is level 3 thinking. Level 3 thinking moves beyond just duty into partnership. It asks, what is the greater purpose here? Or what is God doing in this situation? The entire framework is designed to move children primarily from level 1 to level 2, from what they want to what they ought to do.
And then point them toward level 3.
Which offers the greatest perspective and insight.
So to achieve that shift, we use the tool known as the 3 C's to build consistent initiative. How do they work together?
The 3 C's are cue, conscience, and character. The cue is the external prompt that starts the action. This could be a clock, a written list, or a physical object.
Okay.
The key insight for parents is that they need to help the child connect to an earlier cue so the parent stops being the cue.
Like the story about the recycling bin. The mother's cue was when the bin was overflowing.
Right, which meant the mom was already angry and the task was now urgent.
Yeah, crisis mode again.
Precisely. But the 13-year-old was coached to find an earlier, non-urgent cue, say, when the bin is only 3/4 full. That small shift allows the child to take initiative and move toward independence before the situation becomes a crisis.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
The cue isn't me yelling about the dog. The cue is the dog whining by the door.
There you go. And once that cue is recognized, we activate the conscience. The conscience is the internal prompting that responds to the cue telling you the right thing to do.
And it needs to be trained.
It needs to be trained through clear rules and established family systems, the right way we do things. We use language like, you need to put your shoes away, because that language builds a sense of duty and internal obligation.
Instead of, I need you to do this.
Exactly. We avoid, I need you to, because that centers the focus on the parent's demand, not the child's responsibility.
And the final C is character.
Character is the capacity. It's the muscle. To act correctly, it's built over time by continually developing those new patterns. It's what actually executes the task efficiently. That training is what allows you to reach the point where it takes only 1 minute to clean a room, if you do it often enough. Character is the result of consistent training.
Now, this entire framework, especially level 3 thinking, it seems to rely on a deeper context, the spiritual dimension. which the sources call the superpowers for change.
It does. This is recognizing that deep, lasting change isn't purely about human effort or willpower. When we acknowledge and cooperate with this greater spiritual power, resources like insight, guidance, and strength become available.
Okay.
This cooperation is key for experiencing mature qualities like peace, hope, and love. The source of those character qualities, the fruit of the spirit, is described as things like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, you know the list.
Hmm.
These resources make achieving that level 3 perspective possible.
And if we adopt these strategies, the parent dramatically shifts roles. Hmm. We stop being the umpire or policeman,
constantly enforcing rules and handing out penalties.
And we become the coach.
A coach guides toward the ultimate point B goal. They don't take the field for the players, but they set up the practice drills, they provide the T-charts, and they offer feedback.
So daily tasks and conflicts become training opportunities.
Critical training opportunities to develop the life skills needed for the future. This coaching perspective emphasizes consultation because, as the proverb says, plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. We share our wisdom effectively.
This has been a deeply practical look at focusing on the foundation, not just the facade, of behavior. We've covered the philosophical shift to the heart with the ice cream mystery balls, defining the point B vision, and using specific tools like the instruction routine, the T-chart, and the 3 C's to build that internal self-management and maturity.
The shift is so simple, yet so difficult, isn't it? Realizing that integrity is built by continuously improving our design, just like the penny boat, and that humility is the key to accepting correction and growing. But perhaps the most surprising insight here is about partnership.
Which brings us to our final thought. The source material suggests that when you handle getting things done correctly in the family, when you prioritize heart training, it can actually bring people closer together.
Instead of creating tension, it completely flips the script. Instead of viewing chores, discipline, and responsibility as this series of battles parent versus child, we realize we are partners working toward the same goal. A functional, flourishing family unit.
So challenge yourself today. What specific, intentional daily practice can you start implementing? Maybe setting up a new cue for a recurring chore, or drafting a simple T-chart for an emotional hurdle. Something that prioritizes connection and cooperation.
Something that makes your family function like a supportive internal team rather than two opposing sides.
Because the goal isn't just a clean room, it's a stronger relationship.